Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to episode 5 of the Downtime Podcast. Once again, thanks to everyone who's reached out and given us great feedback since episode 4 with Bex Barrett Honour. We're really glad you're enjoying what we're doing. This podcast is all about getting the wise words of our guests to as many people as possible. So if you're enjoying it, then give us a follow or a like on social media and make sure your friends know where to find us. We're available on www.downtimepodcast.com. We're at Downtime Podcast on Instagram, at The Downtime Podcast on Facebook, and at Downtime Tweets on Twitter. We've got a great guest for you this week. It's John Hall from the YT Mob. He's the mechanic for Aaron Gwynn, so he's responsible for making sure that Aaron has the fastest bike on the planet. We talk about all sorts, from the importance of consistency, how OCD can help you, how they work together over a race weekend, and some of the little tweaks they make to make sure the bikes are really special. Enjoy the episode. John Hall, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, sweet. Thank you for having me. I'm stoked to do it.
Awesome. Thanks, man. So let's get going. People probably know who you are, but they probably don't know a huge amount about you. Can you give us a bit of your background and kind of how you've ended up where you are now?
Man, that's kind of a long story, but the short version of it is I grew up racing BMX like a lot of other kids and working in a bike shop, just kind of trying to get free labor and stuff like that. And so I started learning to work on bikes like that. Fast forward, got out of high school, worked in a couple of bike shops, and then joined the Marine Corps, got out, and was still in Southern California, kind of went back to working in bike shops. I didn't really know what to do, and I started school, and I didn't really like that. And so that kind of left me where I'm at now. I actually found mountain biking just before I left for the Marine Corps. And so I wasn't really that exposed to it, to be honest, until I got out here to Southern California. And got a mountain bike and kind of started tweaking on that and stuff and took my BMX skills to that and the mechanic skills to that. And one thing led to the next. And I actually ended up helping out Rich Houseman with a couple of his bikes. In a local bike shop. And it's funny because I didn't know him right away. But I recognized him. I was like, I know that guy from somewhere. Like I can't put my finger on it. I think I looked him up or something like that. I was like, I knew he's an old school, like not old school, but old mountain biker. You know, I was like, I knew he used to race. And so, and then I actually helped him with a junior development team that he was working with Aaron on. One thing led to the next. And then the opportunity came that Aaron needed a mechanic and here I am.
So was that back in the Yeti days, is it?
No. Well, I think Rich was actually, he wasn't done racing, but at the time, I think Intense was helping him out with a couple bikes. Okay. So it was after Yeti. And Aaron was still on Trek. So it was the development team that Rich and Aaron were working on was a ODI Trek development team. And I came in like right at the end of that. Kind of as Aaron just signed with Specialized. So just before that was I came on and helped Rich out with the juniors bikes and stuff like that. Charlie Harrison was one of the kids. He just signed with Factory Intense this year. And then Aaron signed with Specialized, and then it became the ODI Specialized junior team. And I guess you could say that was like my first team mechanic job. I didn't get paid to work for free. I was just like stoked to do it. Like so happy to work, you know, with a team and, you know, they got free parts and they had sponsors and all this stuff like that. And I'd help them out at the local races and Charlie and the kids and Jason Schroeder, Shane Leslie, those guys, when they'd be here around in my area, I'd work on their bikes or they'd drop them off. And I think Sea Otter that year was 2013, I think. My very first like real big mountain bike race I ever went to and worked at as a mechanic for those guys. So
sweet.
And
what do you think are the key kind of personality traits and characteristics that make you good as a mechanic? What's important in that role?
I guess I'm kind of OCD with it. Not like terrible OCD, like I don't have to do things like a certain amount of times or stuff like that, but just very detail oriented, I guess would be a better way of saying it. Paying attention to the little things. I get asked a lot of questions sometimes, you know, how fast can you build a wheel? Like, how fast can you tear a bike down and rebuild it? And it's like, you know, I think any mechanic probably have the same answer at this level, and we can do it fast. That's not the issue. It's how well you can do it. Uh-huh. I've been asked that similar questions too. You know, what's the difference between World Cup mechanics and a bike shop mechanic, you know? And to be completely honest with you, there's not much difference between a good bike shop mechanic and a World Cup mechanic. The thing that separates them is a lot of times the ability to travel and availability, and but mostly just the speed and the precision at which you can do the things. Oftentimes, you know, you're in less than ideal conditions, and you're asked to perform a task that you know, you'd like to have every tool available to you in a clean workshop and everything like that, but you just don't. And then on top of that, you have to do it in half the time. And then it has to be perfect the first time, because your rider's basically putting their life on the line and their life in your hands to fly down this mountain. So it's just the stress and the amount of time and the precision that you have to do things. Uh-huh. So,
yeah. And are there any things that you've kind of done, any tools that you use to help you ensure that you're maintaining that level of detail? Like, I don't know, checklists or any kind of techniques?
I think every mechanic kind of has their own way of doing things and has their own checklist. And there's checklists all along the process. It depends on what you're doing. If you're bleeding brakes, or if you're just prepping a bike for a qualifying run or a practice run, race run, whatever it be. I've personally got my checklist going through the bike before it goes up. If I have time, you know, there's so many different situations. So if it's before a race run, you've got quite a bit more time. If it's before qualifying runs, depending on, you know, the schedule, sometimes you got a little bit of time, sometimes you don't. And then you've got your in between practice runs. And so each scenario is a different amount of time and different things you have to do. So, you know, in between practice runs, you have a lot less time. But can be just as hectic as anything else. You know, there's been times he's come down from practice run and had a crash and, you know, damaged carbon bars and broke a chain guide and bent pedals and all this stuff. And, you know, he says, I have 7 minutes to go for one run. Like, can you do it? Like, yep. Like, you have no choice. You have to try. And so there's those scenarios. And then, you know, if you've got more time, you've got the bigger checklist you can do from top to bottom, front to back, everything like that. So a lot of times in between practice runs, you don't have time to do everything you want to do. So you quickly go over everything. Maybe you don't check every single bolt, but you, if you know one bolt is apt to come loose, off more often than others, you check that bolt and get them up there as safely as you can.
So if you're short of time, what are the top things that are the most important for you to check? Like, what would you recommend everyone checks on their bikes before they go and ride down a run?
Mainly for us, it's if we're short on time, it's tire pressure, mm-hmm. And spoke tension, and that's it. I get him up in between runs. You know, if he comes down and says, I don't have a lot of time, I'm just going to grab a quick drink of water and go back up. Sweet. Bike goes in stand, check tire pressure, make sure spokes are still tight, tension those if we need to, and anything else that may be bothering him that day, you know, lever position, anything like that. If a pedal comes loose or something, you know, check those real quick. So my biggest things is, yeah, contact points. So pedals, and then tire pressure and spoke tension on those. I don't really, if we're short of time, I don't check bolts. That's something that should have been done first thing in the morning.
Right.
And those should all be torqued spec anyway. So, those don't often come loose unless you've got, you know, some bikes are, have one or two bolts, like, hey, after they get beat up, sometimes one pivot bolt likes to come loose a lot. So maybe check that one. But yeah, all your main safety things should already be done. So the quick thing is just tire pressure, spoke tension.
And is the spoke tension purely to check if a wheel's on the way out, or do you guys play around with spoke tension from the way the wheels feel?
you know, to be honest, we used to play with spoke tension a lot more when we ran aluminum wheels. When we got on these carbon E13 wheels, we haven't had to play with spoke tension much. And so, but when I do check it, it's you're looking for loose ones. You know, if he's taken a hit and knocked a few spokes loose, you want to get those back up tight again. Or if he just says like, hey, can you put it? He'll normally come down. He makes my life a lot easier a lot of times, and we'll come down and say like, hey, can you put a quarter turned on the spokes on the rear wheel or something like that? Like, I don't have to ask why. I don't have to check him. I just, you just do it. Because that's what he wants. He's pretty precise, and 99.9% of the time he's right about what he wants. So, yeah. So if he's asking for it, we just do it. It's not necessarily for one reason or the other. And we don't play with, but to answer your question, no, we don't play with spoke tension a whole lot. As far as traction goes, we can achieve a lot of that with, tire pressure and suspension settings and things like that.
Okay. And what are the kind of main variables that you play around with throughout a, you know, practice session? What sort of stuff are you likely to be changing on the bike?
Just like anything else, it's course dependent. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of factors that go into setting the bike up. Hopefully you show up to the race with a good base setting, so you're not doing a lot of searching. Overall, at a World Cup, a rider, I mean, we'll get maybe, I think I've counted every practice run, qualifying, and race run, included every run down the mountain. And I think he only gets like 11 or 12.
Okay.
So it's not a whole lot. And if you throw in a crash or something like that, or you lose a practice run, so you really have to be efficient with your changes. Uh-huh. So you try to show up with a really good base setting where you're not changing a whole lot. A lot of times for us, it's mainly just suspension clicks. And if we've got to go more than three or four clicks away from our base setting, then we didn't do a very good job of getting a good base setting, preseason. And then it's little things, you know, if it's, he might play with his bar roll a little bit, depending on how steep the track is or just what it feels like. But that's about it, honestly, just suspension and tire choice and tire pressure. That's the main things we try and sort out right away.
Okay. So how important is track walk then? Do you pick up on a lot of these course related variables and where you want to set from the start by doing the track walk together?
Yeah, definitely. Track walk's pretty important. For him and I, we both have different objectives to achieve during track walk. You know, he's looking for lines, terrain and stuff like that. I don't need to know lines. I don't look for lines. He doesn't need my help looking for lines or anything like that. So I don't help him with any of that kind of stuff. But what I doing for myself is I'm looking at dirt conditions, track conditions, thinking to myself, you know, what tires are probably going to run. I'm asking him, what do you think? What do you think about this tire, that tire? He'll usually say like, okay, I want to start on these tires, but have these tires mounted up on a second set of wheels so that we can swap on a third run or something like that. I'll do two or three runs on this tire and two or three on this one. And we'll see which ones are working better. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can sit there and guess all you want, but until you get up on the track and up to speed, that's when things really start presenting themselves. And then I'm not necessarily looking for how I'm going to set the bike up, because I already know we're going to start run one on our base setting, really, no matter what. You know, we're not going to make any changes until we put that bike down the course one or two runs. So not necessarily thinking of how I want to set it up, whether it's spring race or anything like that. All that stuff is figured out. So I'm really just taking mental notes of objects on the track, certain sections of the track, track conditions, the dirt conditions, stuff like that. So that when he does come down and say, hey, you remember that one section with the big rock on the left and I'm scooting just to the right of it, and then I gotta scoot left after that, like, you know, that section. It's like, I know, I can picture in my head and know exactly what section he's talking about. So when he gives me feedback or a description of what's going on in that section, I know what he's talking about better. And we can kind of speed the process of making a positive change up.
Okay. Interesting. So you, I think you're one of the few mechanics that's with the rider the whole year round. I mean, you obviously attend all the races, but I think you do quite a lot of work with Aaron outside of the events. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that interaction between you guys works and what you get up to away from the races?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, I think I'm one of the handful of mechanics that's full time throughout the season, through the off season, everything, all year long with Aaron. A lot of guys are just with their riders at the races, or the first time they see him at team camp, and then at the races they don't do too much work between races. Sometimes they do, but as soon as World Champs is over, they kind of say their goodbyes, and unless they live near each other, you know. But they go their separate ways, and the rider does his off-season training, and a lot of mechanics will go to a second job. You know, some work at a suspension shops, and some go back to a bike shop. So Aaron and I are unique in that I live about 10 or 15 minutes from him, mm-hmm. Here in Southern California. So we can really work together on things all year long. Gives us a few advantages. For one, he already he has somebody here that takes care of his bikes all through the off season, keeps him well maintained, so the bike stays consistent all year long. Second is we can test anything, anytime, and feedback and kind of the way we do things stays consistent. You know, it's not like I'm showing up to the first race and like, oh, you tested how many things? And like, I'm trying to like speed up and try to catch up on everything he's tested and all this kind of things. Like, I know everything, every step of the way, and have helped him with those things. So that helps us out quite a bit. So we do the first month or two of the off season, we're not doing anything too crazy, but things start ramping up quite a bit in November, December timeframe. And then, you know, January rolls around, we're usually doing some local races and a lot more runs throughout the midweek and everything. So he basically has me at his disposal 24/7. You know, if he says, hey, can we go shuttle Tuesday and Wednesday? I basically keep my schedule open so that we can do those types of things.
Cool. So kind of how much time would you spend together on a normal week? Or probably maybe there isn't such a thing as a normal week, but.
I don't know. It depends. Time riding or testing, maybe 2 to 3 days a week on average, when we're kind of in the full swing of things. But we're also just like, we're not just mechanic and rider, we're pretty good friends as well. So, I mean, we just hang out too, go to the movies, go get coffee, catch up, hang out, chat, stuff like that. Just go for mountain bike rides. You know, I'll go with him every now and then on a just chill mountain bike ride. He's pretty good about that stuff. With, you know, if he asks me to go ride, I'm obviously not nearly as fit as he is. But if he's asking me to go ride, he's going to ride with me. It's, you know, he's not going to, if he's got a training ride, then, you know, he'll do that on his own and or with people that he can ride with and keep up with. So, you know, he's not out there to drop me and put me in the hurt locker, even though I do sometimes anyways. But yeah, we hang out quite a bit.
Do you think the fact that you guys are good friends helps? Is that a part of the success of the partnership?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we got a lot of things that we have in common and can relate to. But at the same time, we're still very professional. I've always just been in the mindset where, you know, I can take an ass chewing. He's never chewed my ass, but, I like to keep things not separate, so to speak. It sounds kind of bad. But you know, our professional life and our friend life is definitely different. And so when we're at the races and at the tracks, you know, we're very professional and it's all about business. And we get those things done. And I think that's important to success. You know, he can tell me anything he needs to in any way he needs to, mm-hmm. To get things done and get things accomplished to be the fastest. And then we can leave the races and leave the track and have fun and laugh then.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you guys do that you think is different to other rider mechanic partnerships or to other teams on the circuit?
I don't think so. Other, you know, just that we spend all year long together, and we're not the only ones. There's other mechanics and riders out there that spend a lot of time together and have good relationships, and I've kind of always emulated that anyway, so I'm really thankful for for like what we have and how well it works. You know, I don't want to say I grew up, but, you know, coming into the sport, I looked up to, you know, Nigel Reeve and Stevie Smith, Sam Hill and JC Schumlach, like those guys, those partnerships. You know, I'm a huge fan of motocross, and mechanics and riders often stick together when teams move and things like that. So I've always kind of really liked that aspect of it and tried to emulate it as much as possible. I think there's so many variables in racing and mechanics and everything like that, and the way things work and teams work, that, you know, just like testing, if you can eliminate as many variables as possible, it's for the best. So it's like, you know, if him and I can just, if we stick together, then that's, I only see it as a benefit for both of us. You know, it's one less thing he has to worry about, one less change, keeps things nice and consistent.
You talked about testing and making changes. When you're doing that kind of stuff, whether that's at a race or in a test environment, how are you deciding whether the change is a good change or not? Are you using data? Are you using times? Is it the feel from Aaron on the bike, or is it a combination?
To be honest with you, it's a lot of it's just based off feel. We've used a little bit of data, and we've used timing and things like that. But he's really good at making changes and positive changes and knowing when he's faster. So a lot of it's just based off feel. And we'll get to a point where it's kind of like, yep, sweet. Like that's a good solid base setting. I think from there, you know, he'll say, you know, from there we can move or, make good changes at the races from there. I think that's a good starting spot. And, you know, if we achieve that early on in the test session, or like, you know, a day or two or day earlier, even if it's like last day of testing and we've got, you know, three or four runs left in him, and he thinks he's at a good base setting, he'll gladly usually be the one to mention, you know, hey, let's try some things. Like, let's put a extra volume spacer in. Let's put 10 more PSI in. Like, let's open it up. Let's close it down. You know, because, you know, let's just see where the limits are. Let's see what feels like crap, you know? Mm-hmm. Because it kind of, it'll either A, like reaffirm that the setting is awesome, or, you know, you never know. You might say like, holy crap, like I didn't even think that would feel good, but it does. And now, you know, and it's kind of a mental note going to a race, and, just knowledge that you can draw from.
So as well as working around the sweet spot, you kind of work at some of the extremes as well to understand what impact they have. Is that what, kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's important to know what your limits are, in order to know that you have a good setting or that you're in a good place. You don't really know what feels terrible until you feel it. So even when a rider comes to a good base setting, it's a really good idea to push beyond that and, you know, find what doesn't feel good, on both ends of the spectrum.
Okay, cool. You obviously spend a lot of time on the mechanical side of things, making sure the bike's perfect for Aaron, but you're also the guy that goes up the hill with him and is kind of there at the top. How important is the psychological side of your role when you're in that position and you're with a rider that's about to throw themselves down the hill for a significant run?
I think it's pretty important. But just like anything else, every rider is different in what they want and how they feel and how they deal with those types of situations. And Aaron's the type of guy that doesn't really need much. He doesn't need me sitting there rubbing his back saying it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to do great. You know, go get him, Tiger. He's extremely mentally strong, individual. And, you know, he works on that, I'm sure, as much as he does his physical training. And I think that's important for any racer, whether it's NASCAR or mountain bikes. You know, it's the mental side of the game is a big thing. And he's just as mentally strong as he is physically. So when we're at the top, my job with him there, isn't too much really. I'm there for him. You know, I've got a rag and I've got his water bottle and I've got his drink mix. And, honestly, if we say more than like five words after he gets on the trainer, like it's pretty, that's a lot, you know? We joke and laugh all the way up the lift and everything like that, or talk about the track or talk about whatever, you know? Sometimes we don't even, you know, it's just to get his mind off things, I'm sure, but just, you know, we don't even talk about anything related to bikes most times.
Yeah.
And so, but once we get to the top and I set the trainer up and he hops on it, it's kind of like that's business time. And, the talk stops. So there's nothing to talk about at that point. He's preparing mentally and getting his body ready, and warmed up for the race run. So, you know, my role up there is pretty minimal, really, just make sure he has everything he needs and, the bike's good to go.
Okay. So in order to get a bike good to go, I mean, it'd be good if we could give the listeners to the podcast maybe a few top tips on I don't know, little hacks or modifications or specific ways that you approach setting up a bike for kind of downhill riding. Is there anything that you'd recommend people to try
As far as before the race or during testing, what are you talking about?
Well, just in general, in the way that people set their bikes up, are there any kind of tips or tricks or little hacks that you guys use to make the bike more comfortable or more robust or anything like that that would kind of translate to us normal riders?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, nowadays, a lot of the parts are so great. You know, it's not like the 90s and early 2000s where mechanics were, you know, pretty much had to have an engineering degree to make sure that the bikes would stay together and come up with all little things to keep things quiet or held together, make sure it wouldn't break. Everything's advanced so much where we don't really have to worry about a lot of that too much, but every mechanic still has their little things that they do to the bikes. To make them a little bit more trick, run a little bit smoother, run a little bit faster, a little bit freer. Even if it may not have that much longevity to it, you know, we have the parts and the ability and the resources to rebuild the bikes, you know, every day if we need to. Mm-hmm. But we don't, and we don't usually need to because of everything being so robust. But a few things that we do, you may have seen the recent launch of the FTD, the Flat Tire Defender.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So we actually will run that one. We'll run that on certain courses and sometimes front and rear, sometimes just rear, just course dependent. But he really likes that. That helps us hold up, makes the wheels hold up a little bit longer, you know, just that added little bit of comfort and protection to the equipment, and anything that helps us with that, then, you know, we're going to use that type of stuff.
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, we like to make the bikes as light as possible. We try to run all the best stuff from the sponsors and everything like that. So on top of that, we'll run full tie bolt kits throughout the bike. We get that stuff from Tie Springs, the company there in the UK.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They've always been super helpful to us and given us cool trick bolt kits for the World Champs bikes and then for the race bikes throughout the season as well. And then this year I'm trying a few things with bearings. We tried a few things last year. E13 worked with us on a few things as far as wheel bearings go and bottom bracket bearings.
Mm-hmm.
That were, man, they were incredible. Those freaking wheels would spin forever. I know there's a lot of things that mechanics will do. I don't want to say old school mechanics, but there's a lot of things guys will do that I don't want to say I don't agree with. I get it. I know why, but I just don't do. And a lot of that is like, you know, fully degreasing bearings. And they'll pull every frame bearing out and take all the grease out of those and pull the rubber seals off of them. And then same thing in all the hubs and the bottom bracket bearings and everything like that. And yes, it does free the pivots up and it runs a little bit smoother, but it only runs that way for a few runs. And so that's a lot of work to completely tear a bike completely down and replace all those each time. So things like that. I don't get that crazy. I have done it. I have tried it. I've been that guy that sat there and I've been that mechanic sat there and tweaked out and pulled seals and trimmed seals and pulled grease out and tried, you know, drops of oil, and I've tried lighter greases, and I've tried every kind of grease under the sun in wheel bearings, bottom bracket bearings, frame bearings. I've done it. I've tweaked out on it all. And I've just found that it's not worth the time.
Okay. Interesting.
To do that. I almost prefer longevity over that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
I actually just started trying. I'm still open to try things all the time, and still looking for things to try. So this year, Enduro Bearing actually approached us and asked us if we'd like some frame bearings or wheel bearings, stuff like that. And so they made us up a frame bearing kit. So we're trying those at the moment, and so far so good. I threw them into the practice bike, and we got some probably 2 days of good mud riding and washing the bike after every run. Got it back down to Southern California and pulled the shock off and cycled the suspension through, the frame and everything felt super smooth still. So far so good. I didn't have to touch those bearings either. And so that's what I look for in that kind of stuff. So, race bikes and regular bikes are two different things. You know, your standard practice bike, you probably want to hold up, you leave all the grease and everything. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if the wheel doesn't spin exactly perfect or if the rotor's a little bit bent, but a race bike, man, that thing's got to be so dialed. Brakes got to be spot on. The wheel's got to spin for days. There can't be any friction. But at the same time, I still like the race bike to be robust. So, I used to be the guy that took all the grease out, but I'm not that guy anymore.
A bit less extreme these days then.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And it's races are hectic as they are. So it's tough to keep track of a lot of that stuff, our guys have race bikes in Europe. They have race bikes in the US. They have practice bikes at home. And then you've got, wheels at home, spare wheels at home. Then you've got the wheels on the truck, spare wheels on the truck, and between three riders. So then you have to keep track of whose wheels are whose, and then of whose wheels, which ones are the race wheels, which ones are the practice wheels, and that kind of stuff. And so just to keep a more consistent feel, like I don't do race wheels anymore. I'll have a set of wheels on the bike, and then two wheels set up with usually two different tire setups ready to go. And I keep all those bearings the same. I keep them as consistent as I can across the line so that if he breaks a wheel or if he has to do a tire change or anything like that, that next wheel that I grab is going to feel the exact same as the wheel that I took off.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of time of preparation to pull bearings out, pull seals, trim seals, degrease them, put whatever grease or oil you want to run back in them. And to do that to three sets, that could be 2 hours of your time at the end of your day, So a lot of it's just to save time. But mostly to keep the consistency with the parts for the riders. So.
Yeah. Okay. Consistency feels like a really strong theme. One of the things that I particularly struggle with is consistency in my brakes. Like they can work amazing one day and then like a week later I get on the bike and they feel awful. Have you got any tips for how to keep brakes running well? Because it feels like a bit of a black art to me.
Maintenance. That's the biggest thing I can say is keeping everything clean, keep your eye on pads and rotors because, pads are a perishable item. Every time you use them, you lose a little bit of pad material. So sometimes that firmness will go away as your pad material leaves. So you need to keep an eye on that. Oftentimes, keep your pads, replace them, obviously, if they need to be. If a brake feels spongy or if it doesn't feel solid, don't be afraid to throw a bleed on it. Do it yourself, take it to your local shop. Those guys are always more than happy to do a quick bleed for you. I think people get intimidated by brakes a lot because it's a hydraulic system and it's a bleed process and every company has a different process that they, recommend to do. So a lot of times people shy away from it because of that. My advice is don't be scared. Dive right in. It's just a brake. You're not going to hurt anything. Worst case scenario, you get some oil on your rotors or pads and have to buy new ones. But you're not going to break anything, and if you do, if you're completely honest with the companies, they'll still help you out usually. I don't have any tips or tricks. Our TRPs are pretty solid. And once I get those things feeling pretty good, then I usually don't have to open them up or touch them often. You know, I might do one brake bleed or maybe two at a race. But just because Aaron asked for it, he says, hey, you know, the rear lever's pulling in a little bit. Okay, sweet. There's probably a little bit of air in the system. I'll throw a bleed on it at the end of the day. It's good for the next day, and it's, you know, it's usually good for the rest of the weekend.
Uh-huh. Do you play around with pad compounds at all?
A little bit, not too much. Again, that's based on kind of conditions. A lot of times, or most of the time, I'd say we run the metal compound. They got a lot more solid feel and kind of snappier feel to it. And that's going to be rider preference as well. Some guys like a little bit of smush. Some guys don't like that on-off feeling. And you can achieve that with organic compounds. The last two rounds in where were they? Val d'Isol and Andorra. We switched to organic compounds just because of the weather and the mud, the rain, kept them a little bit quieter. They didn't last as long, excuse me. But they did have a little bit better power in the wet and the mud. And they kept the noise and squeal down, which riders hate noise. So yeah, that helped a lot too. And, you know, my advice for that kind of stuff is don't be afraid to ask people, you know. I'm the first one to admit I don't know everything and I haven't been through every scenario. So, you kind of have to keep a humble mind, I guess. You know, the mechanics on the circuit, we work together more often than people think. You know, we'll be sitting around chatting and just straight up, hey, you know, Doug Hatfield, Bryson's mechanic's like, hey, Doug, what pads are you running today? You know, or Doug will come by and it's like, hey, John, what pads are you running? I'll tell him and he'll say like, oh, you know, are you sure that's a good decision? Like, we're running this because of that. And I'm like, well, I'm running this because of that. And he'll bounce ideas off each other and kind of come to a consensus of what's going to be best for our riders and, you know, and get them down the hill as fast and as safe as possible.
So not too many secrets in the World Cup paddock these days then?
Not too many. I mean, everybody still has their things that they keep behind closed doors. You know, we've certainly got ours. I know other teams and mechanics have theirs. But you have to have that, you know. Those are what we like to call advantages. And so, you know, when you don't have an advantage, then you're not setting yourself up for success. So, yeah, there's still things that we try to keep quiet and keep to ourselves, obviously. And I think most of the other teams probably have something of the same sort in some shape or form of another. Yeah. But, you know, as in general, no, there's not. I can easily, you know, Troy Braza's mechanic, Aaron Peltari, and I have worked together in the past on Specialized. And, you know, it's a traveling circus, man. We're a family, so we see each other for a couple weeks at a time, you know, all through the summer and traveling around, and we see each other on the road and wave and coffee shops and, you know, truck stops. We all stop at the same ones a lot of the time, and chat. So, you know, we're all good friends. And so, you know, if we can help each other out in any way possible, then we do. I wouldn't have learned nearly as much as I know now had, a lot of guys not offered up advice or tips to me. So, you know, I have no problem helping anybody else out either.
Cool. It's good to hear. We're getting close to the end of our time together today. One more quick question. If you had, let's say you've got $100 to spend, what kind of either tools or devices or bits for a bike would you go after? Are there certain things that are like must have bits of kit for you?
Geez, that's a tough call. I mean, I'm a bit of a kind of a tool geek. I love that kind of stuff. But I also love, you know, kind of making a bike factory. You know, that's pretty dang cool. I love how if a bike can be unique and stand out in small, subtle details. I really like the tie bolt kits from Tie Springs. Uh-huh. I think those are a sweet way to drop a little weight and add a lot of, you know, a subtle trick, things to your bike like that, like little details. As far as tools go, I recently started working with Abbey Bike Tools. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, their stuff is crazy precise. The precision on those tools is incredible. I'm not just saying that just because I've worked with them. I've owned their tools before I started working with them. I have a titanium hammer that I got from them, which sounds ridiculous to some people, but for us, and when we travel all the time and our toolboxes have to be under a certain weight, you know, a titanium hammer makes perfect sense. We're not pounding stakes into the ground, so we don't need anything super heavy. The most we'll be doing is knocking a bearing out of the bottom bracket or something like that. And it works great for that. But the rest of their tools, even their hanger straightening tool, that thing's probably my favorite tool right now. It's so incredibly precise and solid feeling and feels great. So a good set of tools is always a good way to spend your money. Uh-huh. And Trick little light bits, titanium, anything titanium you can put on your bike. It's pretty cool to me.
Nice. And are there, like, if you had to kind of only ever use three tools, what are the most important tools in your toolkit?
Oh, geez. Does a set of Allen keys count as one?
Yeah, that's right. You can have that.
Yeah. So definitely a set of Allen keys. And I use that stuff so much. And pressure gauge, yeah. Tire pressure gauge. And, I don't know, a third one. I could probably run off of that pretty well.
What pressure gauge do you use?
It's, I believe it's called an SKS. It's a German brand.
Okay. Is that digital or analog?
Definitely digital.
Yeah.
I do have an analog one in my toolbox just for backup, as well as spare batteries and spare digital gauges. So it's like, I'll never be without a gauge, no matter what. I've got two spares of the gauge that I use plus batteries.
Yeah.
So, a lot of guys use the same one on the circuit. So I'll always have something, you know, if somebody needs it, then I've always got one for them or spare for myself. Those two, I honestly can't think of a third that I would use. Probably my Nipex flush cuts pliers. My Allen set, Nipex pliers, and my pressure gauge.
Okay, good stuff. Well, thanks for your time today, John. It's been really interesting chatting with you. If people want to find out a bit more about you or follow you on social media, where can they find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram, at Juan Hall, old nickname, don't ask. And, I'm mostly on there, so you can find me there.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot for your time, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Well, that's it for episode 5. If you enjoyed it and you've got a couple of spare minutes, then please head over to iTunes and give us a review. It really helps people find our content and make sure that as many people as possible are listening to the Downtime podcast. We've got more great guests coming up, including a multiple-time world champion, so stay tuned for future episodes. And until then, get out and ride.